Today's scripture is from 20:1-20. Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all of your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work. You, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your town. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God has given you. You shall not murder, not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, male or female slave, ox, donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. When all the people witnessed the thunder and lightning, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking, they were afraid and trembled and stood at a distance and said to Moses, "You speak to us, and we listen, but do not let God speak to us, lest we die." Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, for God has come only to test you and to put the fear of him."
Our gospel reading today is from Mark, verse 9:30-37. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. Jesus did not want anyone to know it. His disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him, and 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they didn't know, they didn't understand what he was saying, and they were afraid to ask. Then they came to Capernaum, and he was in the house, and he asked them, "What were you about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they'd argue with one another who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all, and the servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them. Taking it into his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. That was a beautiful anthem. Thank you very much for that anthem. It was so perfect. First of all, let me say how much I've enjoyed being with you this year. You've had to put up a lot this year, haven't you?
We liked it.
Thank you. Well, I like being here. You have welcomed me again and again over the years. Do you realize our time began in 2011? When I became your interim, when Pastor Steve Hartman returned to Greenville. I know your hearts were broken, but you welcomed me nonetheless, so thank you. I really love coming here. Don't we, Ken? Today's lectionary takes us into the Gospel of Mark again. We've been in the Gospel of Mark back and forth. Into the time when Jesus is attempting to prepare the disciples for what is yet to come. Jesus has spoken about being killed and rising again after 3 days. Do the disciples know Jesus is speaking of himself when he says the Son of Man? Do they have any idea what they're asking? Say they want to be the greatest disciple? And why does Jesus bring a child into the conversation and talking about last and first? Well, at the time of Jesus, children were a most vulnerable members of society, and definitely last of all in social standing. So welcoming a child was a radical reversal. The children were not outcasts, but they were non-persons. They had no value. They had nothing to offer. And Jesus takes this and reverses it into the starkest total terms when he says, whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me. So as I read this, I get that Jesus seems to be telling the disciples that if they want to be first, then they aren't grasping what Jesus is saying about his own future. They need to be humble, be realistic, and they definitely need to be better listeners. They're not grasping much of anything at this point. And as I was reading and preparing, I began to wonder if the real question here isn't, who isn't a child of God? Well, the answer is no one. We're all children of God. Recently, at coffee hour, Ken and I were asked about the Ten Commandments, which led me to think about connecting this story in Mark with the ways we treat each other. We've been given a lot of guidance in the Hebrew Bible Testament about how we should treat each other, right? You can see that. The Beatitudes are there. The book of James, the epistle of James, is chock full of the ways we're supposed to treat each other. And then we have the Ten Commandments. So, here you go. The Ten Commandments. You've already heard them, you've read them, but now you get to see them in a short version. When we look at the ten, we can see that the first four are all about God. The second six are about how we live our lives. However, let's be honest, in reality, they're all ten about how we have our relationship with God. So you can say it's about just us, someone else, but it's really all about God. So in a few minutes here this morning, I want to look at the second six and see what we can learn about how to treat God's children. And I'll be putting them into Peg's words, a little bit more contemporary. So let's start with honor thy mother and father. Well, for most of us, I think that seems relatively easy. But if I ask each one of you, I think we'd all come up with different answers. It could mean being respectful, like don't yell at them, don't steal from them, listen to their wisdom, take care of them in their older years, on a regular basis, visit them. I asked Ken for his definition, and he said, give thanks for them. And in being thankful, we are respectful. But let me pause for a minute and have another thought. Some have parents who don't deserve respect or gratitude. I don't think there's anything sinful about putting up boundaries. Sometimes boundaries are absolutely needed. Sometimes parents don't know how to parent. They don't know how to love. And the child takes the brunt of it. I do think that we should avoid hatred and bitterness and anger. That if we can put that aside, then we're all benefiting, especially the person, the child in this story. The child. If we can put aside the bitterness and hatred, you don't have to be in a relationship, but things are what they are. Boundaries are fine. You shall not murder. Now, most of us, we read this and we think we understand, right? Murder is the intentional taking of. And I reached out to my dear friend, Rabbi Audrey Pollack, and she sent me a link about Jewish thoughts about murder, and I was confused, so I made Ken read it. And, you know, we don't speak Hebrew, so we got all these words in here that this Hebrew word means this, and this Hebrew means this. It's not easy to understand, so I'm not even going to try. But here's what we gleaned. The intentional killing of another is murder. I don't find it as clear about other kinds of killings. Unintentional, but responsible nonetheless. Driving while under the influence. Being in a fight, domestic violence, child abuse, things like that. Death may occur unintentionally, but it's still death. Is that murder? We need a study group, don't we? we need to talk about things. We can be clear that intentional killing is murder. You shall not commit adultery. Evident one, right? You don't think I'm going to let you do that, right? Maybe not so according to the Jewish reading. I read that adultery between a married woman and a married man is punishable by death. But a relationship between a married man and an unmarried woman is a slap on the wrist by the rabbi. Yeah. Let's go with the legal definition then of relations between a married and the person they're not married to is the definition of adultery. I think we can agree legally and biblically that's the definition. But what if we take it a step further? What if the definition of adultery, and I'm going with the spirit of it, is anything that takes us away from the covenant of our marriage? Does that always mean physical? Can that be emotional? Can that be, we can talk about a lot of things there, can't we? Can it mean anything that separates us from our partner? Being a workaholic? Too much golf? Buffalo Bills football? Another thing, we need a Bible study, you know? We need to talk about, things that separate us from our covenant, I think, are adultery. You shall not steal. Now, first reading of this is absolutely money, cars, belongings, whatever. Kias are the thing to steal right now. Means that someone walking down the street steals your purse, definitely stealing is going on. Somebody who encourages you to invest your money in their scheme, that's definitely stealing. But can it be more than that? Like stealing somebody's happiness or self-worth? Can't words do a lot of damage? My goodness. I've never understood the old adage that I was taught in elementary school. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Whoever bought that? I don't know where that came from, and I didn't research it because I don't think I want to know. We totally untrue. Our bones can heal, but words spoken can never be taken back. Once they're out there, they're forever. And once they're written down, the internet will never let them go. You can delete, but they don't go away. So we've got to be careful with our words. We must be careful not to rob others of their belongings, but also of their worth and their self-worth and their value. It's been said that scars on the inside take longer to heal than scars on the outside. Speaking of stealing, then you shall not bear false witness. The best example of that is in the news lately. A woman from Springfield, Ohio, posted on Facebook about Haitians stealing and eating their pets. She apologized profusely, but the damage has been done. The story spread like wildfire. Schools and government offices were closed due to bomb threats. Local officials have repeated over and over again that there is no evidence of such crime and asked people to stop the violence. But the rumor continues, and the woman who started it is passionately ashamed. "I never thought it would get out of Springfield," she said. Past Tuesday, the governor, Mike DeWine, said that 33 bomb threats had been received and state troopers had been deployed to protect the schools after the unfounded statements were repeated by others. Bearing false witness is repeating untrue statements about other children of God. If you think about it this way, squeeze all the toothpaste out of a tube and then try to put it back in. Once it's out there, it's out there. And Springfield is an example of that. You shall not covet anything that belongs to your neighbor. Now, the reading from Deuteronomy lists all those things, and that's only a partial list, but what does it mean to covet? Well, covet means to have an intense desire for something that belongs to someone else. So coveting isn't just about wishing you had what Naomi has, right? It's about wanting Naomi not to have it. because I want it. And your talent is not something I can just pick up and take away. But coveting implies a deep, unhealthy desire that leads to resentment, jealousy, and actions that cause one to harm themselves or others. And if you think about this, while it seems it's all about you and your neighbor, it really needs to be seen through the eyes of Jesus and with God. Because if we believe that possessing our neighbor's belongings will satisfy us, we have lost sight of what it is to be in relationship with God. So there it is, folks. My understanding of Commandments 5 through 10 with a lot of conversation from Pastor Ken. Poor guy. Every once in a while I say, hey, can you listen to this? And we've talked about the Ten Commandments a lot. I've read a lot about the Jewish understandings and the Christian understandings. And I believe that while we read them through the lens of the past, we need to look at context too, and we need to see where we are today. However, God's desire for us to be in relationship with Jesus and with God's children does not change. There is no one on this earth that God doesn't love. No one. And the Ten Commandments guide us in loving God and God's children. The Ten Commandments guide us in living with each other in peace and harmony. The Ten Commandments show us that God loves us more than we can imagine or comprehend. Each of us, all of us, everyone. Let me end with words that are attributed to John Wesley, although we're not really sure, the Methodist church leader. Because I believe these short words sum up all of the Ten Commandments. And I may cross-stitch this. Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can.